Hi there, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. More and more people who come to see me ask the same question about intimacy. Men are very curious. How close is close? How close are you supposed to be? Romance is such a tough question. Because what's expected? How close is close? What is real intimacy? And is intimacy being absolutely honest with each other? That's a good definition of it. Some people say that's the definition. No separation. No, where were you yesterday because you didn't answer your cell phone? Is that part of intimacy? Is part of intimacy where you're accountable to the other person all the time for every minute of your time? Is it two people coming together from two different worlds, operating in their own worlds and connecting through their worlds? Or is it two people getting together from two worlds and forming one world, where they no longer have a right to an independent life? Well, that's a question. I mean, for some people, you love your partner's independent life because you admire it. You look at it. You see it. It's separate from you. But if you're needy, you resent their separate life. Hey, you don't want them to go away on a business trip. You don't want them to go away doing things, you know. You want them to stay at home, be there with you. There are times that men, I know men, and women who are with violent men or potentially violent men who don't know how to deal with the relationship, they learn a trick. If he's in a good mood, then you can say practically anything. If he's in a bad mood, keep quiet. Watch out. Children of wives of alcoholic husbands generally know this. When the husband is drinking, try not to confront him, because that's not a time to confront him. Because his guard may be down, the thing that inhibits his inhibition may be down, and he could become violent. Equally, men learn that there are times you could talk to a woman you're related to, and there are times you can't. There are times when she wants every bit of truth that you have to offer. And then there are times when you're just better off keeping your mouth shut. And most men know that. If most men I know, mature men, were to advise younger men how to deal with relationships, they would say, just shut up. Just keep quiet. Well, that seems to be a standard, because we see many men and many women in their relationships. We see a woman who is demanding more intimacy from the man. She wants him to open up and she wants him to talk. And he's saying, I think I'll just keep my mouth shut. More and more we see men who are guarded with their feelings. They decide that they will just be quiet. And they don't mean to stonewall. They're not just doing it in an angry kind of way. They're just doing it in a self-preservation way. I open my mouth, I get in trouble. I keep my mouth closed, things go smoothly. It's the yes, dear syndrome, you know? So what do we do, and how do we get closer? What if you're one of those men who learned by watching your parents how to function? You know, you saw your parents, they were either violent and fighting, or they were removed from each other. Where do you learn? Where do you learn what's real and what's not real and what's close and what's not close? One man I know said that the greatest closeness he ever felt was for his dog. And when describing to his therapist what kind of relationship he wanted, he said, I would love to love someone the way I loved my dog. The therapist, hearing that, said, you want to love a dog. You want a woman to be a dog. You want her to be a puppy, follow you around. And the man realized that therapist didn't understand at all. Because the main thing about the dog was that he loved her. He loved his dog. He had a girl dog. He loved his dog, though. And it was just like this return affection. It was unquestionable. There was no anger between them. There was no nastiness. You know, relating to animals or nature is safe. Because we will not be judged. We will not be criticized. Our pet will not abandon us because we're inherently defective or there's something wrong with us. Nature will not reject us because we're personally shameful. People will reject us. But nature and animals, they won't. So when you meet people who spend a lot of time in nature and they say, oh, I find great peace in nature, it's because when they're in nature, they're not getting rejected or told what to do. When you find people who love pets so extraordinarily, you know, and they are animal activists, you know, they're more with the animals than they are with the humans, and they like animals more than humans because the animals don't reject them. Rejection, abandonment, criticism. Those are some of the elements that happen in relationships when you're close to somebody. And it's not such a nice thing. Holy cow, to look at somebody who you really care about and see them look at you as if you don't even exist, or they're angry with you, or they feel nasty with you. Now, becoming intimate with somebody involves a lot. And I don't know if it's wise to be intimate with somebody who's going to hurt you. You know, if you choose somebody to hurt you, if you choose somebody who may hurt you, that may not be the person to be trying to test out your intimacy with. A very wise man, Carl Menninger, once said, we want the neurotic to understand one thing, that they want the right things from the wrong people and the wrong things from the right people. Get this, and here's what he would mean by that. Let's say that you meet somebody who is capable of truly loving you while you focus on them sexually. And you say, all I want is sex with that person. So you want the wrong thing from the right person because that person truly is capable of loving you completely beyond sex. Or you want the wrong, that's wanting the wrong thing from the right person. Or you want the right thing, let's say you want truly to be loved, from the wrong person. You pick somebody who absolutely has no interest in loving you just to take advantage of you in one form or another. We want the wrong thing from the right person and the right thing from the wrong person. We trust the people we shouldn't trust, you know, and we love the people we shouldn't love. That's the neurotic way of being, according to Carl Menninger. And he said the biggest thing about it is that nobody wants to see it. You see, it's not just these two things, but the biggest part of it is the denial of its very existence. So we wonder, why did we pick somebody like that? Who turned out like that? Well, because as Menninger says, it's a strategy. See, fear of intimacy is kind of at the heart of this. Because what is intimacy about? You know, I mean, well, we know what intimacy is. We know what being close is, do we? It's not that over-engulfed thing. It's standing next to somebody and being close and feeling completely related to and attached. But fear of intimacy is because we have a fear of abandonment, betrayal, and rejection. Those three things. We don't want it. We have fears of these because we were wounded when we were kids. We tried loving. Sharing who we are is a problem. Because at the core of our relationship with ourselves is this feeling that came out of childhood that something was wrong with us, that we are absolutely defective. And many people who seek out psychiatric help go to psychiatric help with one question in mind. What's wrong with me? There must be something wrong with me because I can't find a solid relationship. And the truth is there is something going on. There is a thing you have. It's Gardol. How many of you know what Gardol is? No, huh? Too young for Gardol. Gardol was Colgate toothpaste. Had invented the shield And it was like a plastic shield that surrounded your body. And it was called the Gardol shield. And it's when you have bad breath, you are protected from the world because you have a Gardol shield. Well, many people who have relationships have a Gardol shield. Nobody can get through to them because there's this invisible layer protecting them from getting close to you. Do you ever feel that way about yourself? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, asking this question about how close is close, and is it too close? And what is this intimacy question all about? And we're certainly going to take your calls today and listen to you about this issue as well. You see, because somewhere back there we took a look at two people who were not too good at loving each other, our families, even though we saw a certain way of being, we expected it to kind of be that way. Now, this is not everybody, but most of us, most people who have difficulty in relationships today had difficulty in childhood, in relationships. In truth, the way our parents treated us in childhood didn't really have anything to do with who we really were. You know, was not really very personal. They were incapable of seeing themselves clearly, usually, our parents. They certainly could not see us clearly, nor could they see our unique individuality from a perspective that allowed them to honor and respect our unique individuality. You know? It was filtered through a prism of their own shame, their own woundedness, their own needs. They saw us as a fix for their feelings. And our parents wanted us to be the ones who would make them feel better about themselves. That's what they wanted from us. And an extension of them, something to give their life meaning. Or perhaps they saw us as an inconvenience, a burden, you know, something that was holding them back, preventing them from making their dreams come true. Many parents say that, you know, I can't do it because I have kids. How do you think you feel unconsciously to your kids if you believe that your kids are holding you back from your freedom? Oh, boy, is there a resentment underneath there, but you can't see it. You don't even allow yourself to feel it, but it comes out. And then some of them who feel that they were buried behind this kind of responsibility take to alcoholism. And then that leads to a whole other set of behaviors that leave you feeling even more and more worthless and responsible. Yep. Our parents and society taught us very clearly through direct messages and role modeling one thing. Don't be honest. Don't tell the truth. Don't say who you are and don't say what you feel. Be something other than what you really are. Behave. Become a person who I will admire and like. Dishonesty. Our parents taught us that we were how to keep up appearances. Worrying about what the neighbor thinks is what we were concerned about. It was more important than our feelings, because it was so important to them. Some of us experienced a parent who went to the other extreme, where they acted like they didn't care what anyone thought, and what caused us to feel embarrassed and ashamed of their behavior because they were so out of place. So many people are embarrassed by their parents. Another thing that happens. So since the basis of what we learn as children is to lie, mean to not feel our real feelings, not show our real feelings, and to be somebody who would be more pleasing to them so that we could get love from them. How do you then take a definition of love and you say to somebody else, what I want in love is truth? What I want is an honest relationship. Well, how are you going to have an honest relationship? You've never seen one, you've never been one, you've never been honest yourself. How can you have an honest relationship? That's the problem. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to show you how. I'm going to show you how today. You know, we live in a society where the emotional experience of love is conditioned on behavior. Fear, guilt, and shame are used to try to control people's behavior. You know, but it's like it's your behavior tells me whether you love me or not. It's your behavior. It's the way you act that is your the way you love, and it's the way I act towards you that shows the love. Is that what it's about? Is it about the behaviors? Or is it about something else? Is there a connection that is so essential, so beautiful, so deep, it goes beyond all of that? Is there? Well, I say there is, and I want to show you a little bit about getting into it and how to find it and how to look at it today. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. There are so many wounded children, so many. So many children who feel like they're defective, unlovable. So many people. It's very important to recovery to start to make a distinction between being and behavior. Get that now? Between being and behavior. Growing up in dysfunctional societies teaches us to equate our worth and to judge the worth of others based on external appearances, on the way people look. We experience love as conditional on behavior. Someone who behaves badly is a bad person. Someone who behaves the way we want them is a good person. It's very important to start judging our worth based on somebody else's standards for what good and what bad is. A person who behaves in a way that is not convenient to you is not a bad person. That's very important to learn. And it's very important to start putting that into force. They are different than you are. They have another way. It is whatever floats your boat. Whatever makes that person get through. That's what it is. Start to appreciate that in people. If you want to be loved, loved and feel loved before you die, start looking at people as people doing the best that they can, even if they're being sloppy. Stop judging them. Stop criticizing. Stop getting angry at them for being who they are. Let them be. Learn them. Understand them. If they're not ready for you at the moment, let them have some space. They'll come back. When I use the term judge, I'm not talking about making judgments about our own or other people's beings based on behaviors. In other words, I did something bad, therefore I am a bad person. I made a mistake, therefore I am a mistake. That's not true. If you do something bad, you're not a bad person. And if you make a mistake, you are not a mistake. What is toxic shame is all about? It's like feeling that something is wrong with your being and you're somehow defective. So, how are you going to get around it? Here's the trip, my friends. Here's the goal. Here's kind of what you should do, and I'm going to tell you to give it a try. To be intimate. Number one, love people. Now, of course, you know, they say you're never going to love anyone unless you could love yourself. Forget it. Love other people first, then maybe you'll love yourself. And by love other people, I mean do not judge. But see, wherever you judge, that you are being touched in a way that challenges you. Look at people and say to yourself, hey, how are they doing what they're doing? Why are they doing what they're doing? And let me appreciate it. Let me appreciate them doing what they're doing. There's a church up where I live. And behind this church, there are homeless people who live in boxes. And they forage for food because they live opposite a supermarket, where when the supermarket throws its food away, they forage the food and bring it up to these little boxes that are hidden behind the pillars of the church. I think it's amazing. I go there occasionally, and if someone has brought me food that I'm not going to eat or something like that, I'll leave it on the steps because I know it's going to be used and taken in some way. I admire the ability to do this. I admire the peace of it. I admire the kind of amazing sense of self that makes it work. Or whatever sense of self it is. So first is to open yourself to who people are and what they are and not judge them. And so therefore you listen to the positive mind. That's what people tell me. They say, I listen to the positive mind and I hear you look at just about anybody. Now you'll hear people call in for this program and you'll say that person is downright wacky. A person will call in and say, I was listening to this show from space. And I was listening to the show and I was told by an alien monster that your show is going to project the exact ending of the world. I had that happen once on radio. Now, listen, this guy's not in touch with reality. I know that. He's living on another planet. I know that. I mean, my heart goes out to him. Of course he calls in. He's making contact with me. Unconsciously, he's contacting reality. He's throwing his hand into the telephone and begging, pleading for me to take it. What do I do? Say to him, you're whacked. Get out of here. You're crazy. You're stoned. You're drunk. Whatever. I don't do that. I take your hand. Okay. Thanks for making contact. So the telephone calls, as you listen to them, I try to model to you how it is possible to embrace people. Now, some people don't want to be embraced, and I will say to them, you know, I'll try to accept them, and then they'll fight me. And I'll try again, and they'll fight me, and then I'll say, okay, I'll move on to the next person, because you don't want to get stuck trying to change somebody too much. Or trying to invite them in, because if you try to invite them in the middle of the cold weather and they don't want to come in, it means you keep your door open and your house gets cold, you know what I mean? Got to just keep it open a little bit. Now, opening yourself is the next step. Opening yourself to what you are feeling is a gigantic step to developing your own sense of intimacy. You see, we've been trained not to feel. We don't know what we feel. We know what we think. And we think about relationships and think about relationships, but we don't know what we truly feel. If you ask somebody what they feel, they say, I feel jealous, I feel guilty, but those aren't the real feelings. That's not it. That's what you're thinking. How do you identify what you feel? Well, think about what you're feeling right now, my friends. Take a breath. Take a deep breath. Relax. What do you call that feeling? You don't have to have a word for it. Are you sad? Are you glad? Are you mad? Do you feel bad? Those are four ways of looking at it, you know? And you have that feeling just where you are right now, go there once more, you know, take another breath. You're nervous? Anxious? Feel jumpy? All of that stuff is very important to identify. Learn to recognize the sensations, especially the body sensations, that accompany emotions. Shallow breathing may indicate anxiety, for instance. In fact, psychotherapist Fritz Perl called anxiety excitement without the breath. You know, he said it's because you're not breathing. You're just so excited you're not even breathing anymore. The next step to lowering the walls to someone else and increasing the intimacy in your life is to become more comfortable in sharing your feelings with other people. Now, sharing your feelings with other people, telling them what you feel. I know half a dozen people. I ask them what they feel, and they say, fine. And I go, oh, no. And I'm looking at them, and I look at them, and they don't feel so fine. And I know they say, fine. So I know this is not the road to ask, what do you feel? But I see you're not happy. You're numb. You're dead. You're not feeling anything. So that's one, is to recognize that. But then what you have to do is be able to identify your own feelings and be able to say, here's what I feel. I am sad. I am angry. I'm upset. I'm feeling. And to be able to tell people what you feel. Now you try to take responsibility for your feel rather than what you feel rather than blaming people. You blame no one. You say, I feel sad. I feel lonely. I feel, but not because of the doorman or because the dog ate the homework or not because of you. It's just a feeling I have right now. You call that taking full responsibility for it. You try to keep it simple. You try to keep it direct. You kind of relate your feelings in a simple, direct way. Now, of course, people don't know how to respond to this because, remember, they were all trained the way you were. They don't know how to identify a feeling. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, by the way. So keep it simple and direct. Remember that emotions don't always have to be monumental things. Sharing your feeling about a piece of music or a movie you've just seen with a friend is a great way to begin the experience. Oh, I felt sad when I watched that movie. Oh, that movie made me feel happy. You know, it's okay. Just talk about what you feel. If you develop a greater capacity to communicate your feelings with others, you'll soon find one of two things. Some folks will reciprocate and share their feelings. Others will not. They may even prove uncomfortable with your opening up. Don't allow other responses to put you off track. People choose different levels of intimacy with one another. I know a man who went out there and he decided he was going to be honest. So he went around and he picked all these women and he was telling them about what he felt. And they said, you're a wimp. And they got rid of him. They dumped him. But all the women he picked were women who didn't want to hear a man's emotions. There are a whole other group of women who would have responded to his emotional self very well. But he was still choosing the wrong people for the right things. You see? Don't allow people to put you off track. People choose different levels of intimacy with one another. If your goal is to open up the walls and have your more intimacy in your life, look for people who respond positively to your initiatives. These are the people who have the greatest potential for giving you what you are seeking. I have a man I work with. His name is James Ballin. Some of you know him. Here is a man who's so committed to the honesty of his feelings that he keeps them open at all times, available for anybody who wants to see it. He meets people for the first time sometime because he's perceived by many as being, you know, a magician, a guru, and because he's so beautiful, that healer. So when people go to see him, sometimes they go to see him and they just look in his eyes and they come away feeling they have to run away. I can't be with him. He must be gay. Or there must be something wrong with him because he's so honest. I don't like that honesty. So I've learned to only refer people to James who are the most courageous people. The people who are willing to look at themselves in the mirror, because that's what an open, emotional person does. When you're related to somebody who has deep feelings and deep emotions, they hold a mirror up to yourself because you can no longer get lost trying to find out who they are. You know what I mean? Most people have a maze they're hiding behind, spend all your time investigating it. When somebody's right there, it's like a mirror. The only thing that's left looking into is yourself. Hey, Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to go, and when we come back, we're also going to take some of your calls, and I'm going to play you some... Oh, I'm going to do an interesting music thing today. Am I going to do an interesting music thing today? As soon as we get back from our break, we'll take a short break. All right. Now, what I have for you today is something kind of remarkable. I want you to hear Enrico Caruso singing O Solo Mio, which is about me. Oh! when I was a kid, you know, there was no, we'd walk around the neighborhood and you'd hear opera and everybody would kind of put their hands over their heart and they'd yell, they'd imitate Caruso. And they would say, oh, solo mio, and it was like a joke. Only then, you know, eventually opera became much more mainstream and people got to appreciate the beauty of the voices. Really beautiful, don't you think? Well, maybe you do think it's beautiful, maybe you don't think it's beautiful. It is beautiful. It is Enrico Caruso, you know. I mean, we know Pavarotti, and we know Pavarotti's work, and he was like a latter-day. But then I want to show you a different version of the very same song and how it would be done today if it were not opera. Mr. V. From Enrico Caruso to Mr. V. What a range, huh? Hey, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, in case you just tuned in. We're talking about intimacy and love, and we're talking about intimacy, which is kind of a goal and what it is and what it's not. It's not that kind of you're swallowed up in somebody else and that's all it is, but we know that's not what the real stuff is. However, it feels so good to be swallowed up in somebody else, doesn't it? falling in love is this amazing thing. One day you're walking around, you're worried if you have any money, you don't know what you're going to be doing with your life, you're not sure about your job, your profession. Next day you meet somebody and you're completely into them. You spend a great night with them, and this is your whole life. You feel overjoyed, juiced, experienced. It's love is your purpose. It's a great thing. It's a great feeling, but we kind of know after a while that that feeling requires a little more if you want to kind of string it out so that it lasts. And one of the things it requires is both Enrico Caruso and Mr. V. It requires both. It means the depth, the seriousness, the music, the singing, the movement, and it needs you to be flexible. Intimacy requires kind of a sincerity, you know. I don't mean morose. I mean sincere. To be intimate with somebody, you have to be sincere with them. Because other than that, you can make believe you're intimate, and they could believe you are make believe intimate. And many people have many relationships on a make believe intimate way. They have make-believe intimacy, you know. Oh, I love you. Oh, I love you so much. Oh, I love you so much. Oh, I love you so much. What's your name? That's today, see. That you could have, and you could even feel it at the moment. You could feel so impassioned, so loved, so... But this genuine insincerity is a real question. Are you sincere, my friends? That's a question I have of you. Do you feel sincere right now? Do you feel sincere in your relationship? Now, what does sincere mean? Does it mean, what do you think it means? What do you think sincere means? Honest? No. Well-intended? Maybe. Positively intended? Well, okay. Beyond your own gratification? Well, I don't know. Maybe it's all about your own gratification. Maybe the sincerity is, I'll give you if you give to me. Or maybe it's just knowing what you want with who you're with, and that somehow they know that what you want is what you want. Their sincerity. When somebody knows your intention. All right. So sincerity and genuineness. Now, that's very tough because most people are not genuine with themselves. So it's very hard for them to be sincere with themselves. All right, so if you can't say something nice is something that you shouldn't be afraid of. Small wonder that people learn to speak truthfully about their feelings when they're only afraid, they only want to say nice things and they're afraid to say anything when things don't feel good. You know, sincerity. Someone once said, sincerity is the most important thing in life. Once you can fake it, you've got it made. That's false intimacy. False intimacy can easily develop into online chat rooms, for instance. It seems you could have a heart-to-heart conversation with someone and then you make plans to meet and they don't show up and they aren't who they represented themselves to be, or the chat and email connection is suddenly just dropped without explanation. These folks aren't practicing intimacy. For them, relationships are simply a source of entertainment or diversion. The party drug, ecstasy, was one that leads you to a feeling of intimacy, but it's a false sense of intimacy. One of the things many men like about ecstasy is it increases the sense of well-being, connection, and affection to others. The problem is ecstasy produces this out of a neurochemical reaction, not out of a relationship. I know men who despised one another. I know men and women who despise one another and would well to avoid each other, but under the influence of ecstasy and a musical driving beat resurrected unhealthy relationships that should have been left dead and buried a long time ago. With practice, experience, occasional coaching, you can learn to open your heart and develop closer relationships. You have a right to healthy, affectionate closeness with others. Don't let the fact that these don't happen automatically talk you out of getting what you want. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. Love to take some calls from you today. 212. 209-2900. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear what you have to say about getting close and getting too close. 212-209-2900 is our number. Give a call in. Let's hear from you. By the way, I want to welcome Stephanie Roth, who you've heard on the air, has permanently joined the Positive Mind team. So she is now helping us create and produce and research. Great social worker, scientist, psychotherapist, and administrator. She does a tremendous amount of things. So she's joined us. I also want to always thank Paula Jack for her help and what she's done, and Jana, who is also terrifically helpful. These are people who are part of this team. And, of course, not to leave out the very great Tom Gerby, who manages the website and keeping these archives coming out to you over and over again. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, Michael G. Haskins. Let's take one of the calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, this is Herb. I'm a 12-step junkie. And I belong to Nicotine Anonymous. I go to Nicotine Anonymous. And a patient of mine died. And I feel real bad about it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, he went into the hospital for an operation. And it's a big cover-up as to what he had. And I didn't hear from him in a few weeks. And I heard from his roommate that he died January 6th. So I have this very short poem that I'd love to send up to him. And it's a half a minute. May I read
it? Sure.
This is by Paul Chipkin, also a member of Nicotine Anonymous. We are the wildflowers. We are the mentally ill, God's wildflowers. As seed, we were carried by the wind. I choke up with this. to land in strange soil. However difficult, we took root, grew different yet beautiful, and ultimately found our place in God's scheme. We are the wildflowers. Were we ever intended, like wild horses, to be broken, then tamed, to end up standing behind some counter on some ward, counting out somebody's puny allotment of cigarettes? We are God's wildflowers. We see things others don't see. We hear things others don't hear. We learn things others don't learn. We are God's beautiful wildflowers. We come to believe after a while that by making us such, by keeping us wild and free, he has given us his most special blessing. Hello?
Herb, what's the man's name, the man who died?
His name is Bob Hayes. He was he had stopped smoking for about a year and a half, and he came up to me one day after.
Do me a favor, Herb.
What?
Herb, would you read me that last stanza again?
We are God's beautiful wildflowers. We come to believe after a while that by making us such, by keeping us wild and free, he has given us his most special blessings.
Thank you, Herb. That's perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. And to Bob, I'm sure you're listening. Thanks, Herb. 212-209-2900. And to all the wildflowers out there, let me say one more thing before we take another call. You know, it's very important to understand that even though I am sure to tell you to identify your feelings and feel your feelings and be aware of your feelings, remember you are not your feelings. Just because you feel angry doesn't mean you're an angry person. Just because you feel jealous doesn't make you a jealous person. Just because you feel sad doesn't make you a sad person. You are not your feelings, and your feelings sometimes are emotions that are based on some fears and chemicals taking place in your body, that all kinds of things could be firing. Fear could come from any one of hundreds of sources. Just because you feel fear doesn't mean you're a frightened person. So it is very important to know that when a person says to you, because I feel it, it is valid. No, you don't have to validate someone's feelings. Just as your feelings are not necessarily valid, except for the fact that you feel them. So it's for you to feel, and if you choose to share them, that's fine. But if you choose to lay them at somebody's door in such a way that they have to treat them preciously, and they have to take care of them in a certain way, then keep them to yourself. Somebody had once a thing to say about sharing feelings. And they said, he said, oh, it was me who said it. I forgot. And he said, you know, sharing a feeling. I said, you know, if you share a sandwich, you get only half a sandwich. Well, the same thing with feelings sometimes. Sometimes feeling your feelings is the most important thing. And just sharing them, some people just share them so they won't feel them, so they can feel only half as much. So, for example, if you say to somebody, I'm feeling sad, and then they come over and take care of you, well, you don't feel as sad. So the third part of this, as well as expressing your feelings and learning to listen to other people's feelings, is learning to not advise. It is very important not to be given advice or to give advice when someone shares a feeling. You don't have to solve anything if someone is distressed. If someone feels so close to you that they could share a feeling and tell you that they are distressed, don't solve it. Just hug them. Just hold them in their place. Just say, it's okay. I'm here for you. You know, people are pretty strong and they do have their own solutions. But part of what stops people from being intimate with each other is this need to solve the problems. You don't have to. Just let the person be depressed. Leave them alone. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I don't know if you'll remember me, but I was on your show last week when you did a little exercise on right-hand dominant, left-hand dominant.
Yes, I do remember.
My name is Heidi.
Hi, Heidi, yes.
I was very touched that day that I spoke to you. I was very touched by some things that you said. Ironically, I only got to hear about some of the things that you said after the show because there was something wrong with the mic and I couldn't hear you, but my friend brought me a CD of it, and so I was able to hear that you said for me to get in touch with you, and you also, well, one thing that I did hear was that you said you must have been through a horror, and
yes.
I was kind of intrigued as to how you knew that. But I was very hopeful. I tried to get in contact with you. I don't have a computer, so I can't do it that way. And I'm currently medically disabled, so I can't get out. The only contact I could have is phone, but I was feeling disappointed that you didn't get back in touch with me. I didn't know if there was some personal reason or just that you were busy.
Understand?
I was very hopeful.
So let's see, you called my office and they took a message and they gave me the message?
Well, I asked if they did and they said yes, that you
Yes, they will always give me the messages. Here's the only reason I can think that I didn't call back, is I get these, I get many messages, as you can imagine, and being a clinician, many of them are crises. And
yes,
last week there was a series of crises that happened in people's lives that I was attending to.
Yes.
So I'd be perfectly happy you call one more time and you'll be getting the call back from me, number one. So the only time I don't respond to people is when there is other priority, which means people who are in their the throes of something that may be life-threatening.
Yes,
so that's item number one. Item number two, the problem with the microphone happens to be only if you're on the phone. If you're still on the phone after I'm speaking, when we hang up, you can't hear as well. But right, for almost everyone who ever hears this program, if you want to hear it, you could always listen to it on the Internet. If you have the Internet. Now, I know you don't, but you do have a CD player, which is beautiful.
Yes, my friend.
So I look forward to talking to you. I look forward to speaking to you, and you just let them know that you were talking to me on air, okay?
I'm very hopeful because you really touched me, and I laid out there pretty much I cut open my heart just to show you what I was feeling.
Well, you see, now, that has a suggestion to it.
Yes?
That because you cut open your heart, I now have a responsibility.
Oh, yes, and I don't want that.
Okay, so you have to understand, this is the thing that I was talking about with people.
Right.
The way you just expressed it when you said to me just now, I hope you do respond to me because I cut out my heart, I cut open my heart to be able to talk to you, sounds as if what a horrible being I would be not to respond to you.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not the message I want.
I know it's not, but it's very important to understand that somehow you do convey that message.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
I will definitely return your call with a cut up heart or not.
Well, my heart is fine, but I thank you so much.
It sounds to me like you have a very flexible heart.
I do. I think I'm just so hopeful because I admire so much your work, and I feel I'm so close to this one big obstacle that you called a doozy, and I think it is a doozy, but I'm so ready to get rid of it and to just move on.
Now, did you say you're shut in your house? You can't get out?
Well, I can get out, but it's really anything that I do outside, I have to plan days in ahead with rest, and I'll have to take a wheelchair. You know, it's a lot of planning has to go around any time that I do go out, so it's a big deal when I do go. I can't just walk out spontaneously. A lot of planning has to happen, so that's why it's a little difficult for me, but I can get out.
We'll talk. We'll see what we can do.
Thank you for calling in. Thank you so much for everything.
Sure.
And that's truly my sincerity. I really love your work.
Thank you. You're amazing. You know, it's the emotional trauma we suffered in early childhood created inside of us this feeling of being broken. And then sometimes we convey to others that they have broken us. You know, it's like you walk around and you feel like, I know a couple of people who do that, and this is not Heidi, but I know people who walk around and they were, before they ever met you, they were broken. And then when they got to you, they claim you broke them. And you believe you broke them. Because they say, you broke me. You know, I mean, a lot of therapists are used to that. They run into patients who say, you know, the patients hold the therapist responsible for the way they are. Because they're saying, this is what you did to me. But, you know, most people who are damaged were damaged for a very, very long time. But we've got to fix it. We've got to help with it. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Tuesday at 1, right? Yeah. And what do we do for people today? What do we have in there? Is there a number one in there? We will be back with you Tuesday at 1, and until then, God bless you, whatever that means. Give me, if you want to get in touch with me, it's The Positive Mind, WBAI, thepositivemind.com, or through WBAI. This is Armand DeMille, back with you on Tuesday at 1.